Hey everyone, I guess we can finally mention the sponsor because the season's over.
Thanks,
so,
sponsor.
Kansas City Beer Company, thank you for sticking out the season with us, for joining the Amateur Hour team. We're very, very blessed to have such a cool sponsor, a local Kansas City product made of 100% organic ingredients for all of your manly grooming needs.
Yeah.
Continue to support them, as we hope that you have been doing. And, you know, it's going to start warming up out there. But that doesn't mean trimming your beard. That just means make sure that you look sharp. And, yeah, we're gonna talk some football. We're going to talk about Chiefs. It's been a while.
What is this, Amateur Hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur Hour
is what's happening.
Amateur Hour
is what's happening.
AHPKC is brought to you by ArrowheadPride.com. This is a show about football and friendship and fun. We're truthful, but not always accurate. We're red and yellow and ridiculous. We're basically Andy Reid's wardrobe, but a podcast. Enough of the formalities. Can we talk Chiefs now? Let's go.
Welcome back to Amateur Hour, folks. I'm Ryan Scott Hall, and the dude that we were worried about for a little while, but now he's back, across the table, is Darkness.
Fuck!
All right, that's one way to start the show. rated R on iTunes for a reason.
Yeah.
Sorry,
we went on 610 for a few days, and I had to really watch myself to not say any cuss words, so I plan on aiming for about between 30 and 40 today.
Okay, well, let's start with that. So, for the second year in a row, the Chiefs hosted a playoff game at Arrowhead.
Sorry,
and
guys.
For the second year in a row, we were invited into the studio to talk to Carrington Harrison about the Chiefs game. And for the second year in a row, the Chiefs lost that game in very strange and very embarrassing fashion.
So, yeah, CDOT's been around 610 for a while. And we had the What's Right curse. And then we had the Parking Spick of Death. And now we got us chums going in before two home playoff losses in a row. And now we're the curse. So it's everybody around Carrington Harrison that is cursing,
Kansas. He's the source. Okay. Well, I mean, the Carrington curse. Interesting. Well,
but it's not like him. It's him projecting onto everybody else. So I guess maybe it is him. I don't know.
Okay. Well, all right. One of the things about Amateur Hour is that we like to talk about how, we're amateurs.
Yeah.
We're fans and there are certain things that I guess we really like and we're passionate about, but expertise is not necessarily our strong suit.
Mm.
However,
I do feel like I got a lot wrong this season.
His Darkness, late in the season, did mention that he is an expert at walking out of Arrowhead disappointed.
man.
I want to ask you a few questions. Because I know that, some people have probably buried this game and they don't want to talk about it anymore. And we're late to the party to talk about it, but I don't care. We're going to do what we want to do.
We don't care.
So I want to ask you first, and you can go in any direction here. If it has to do with the coaching or the players or the referees or any of the things that could also be, involved, whether it's, you know, you going to the game and me not going to the game, or us going to 6-10 before the game to do the pregame show. Whatever it is, why did the Chiefs lose?
Why did the Chiefs lose? Man, I don't know. They're just a tortured franchise, man. I know they shit their pants. I know they played terribly, and I mean, that's part of it. That's a part of the being tortured. Mm-hmm. But to watch a quarterback throw a pass and have it deflected directly to him in stride, almost like he planned it. Like, that thought crossed my mind. Like, man, did he know he was not going to score and then throw it off his hands knowing it would bounce to the defender's right into his hands and he'd be right in the corner of the end zone? But that, I mean, combined with, you know, the terrible call that has to happen in the Chiefs playoff loss. Everything else, I mean, everything from that fucking game, it was just one big Chiefs playoff loss put together into one.
It was everything. You had the bad calls. You had the weird play, the Mariota touchdown. You had the missed field goal
off the upright.
You have all the different like every component of all of the gut-wrenching Chiefs losses in the playoffs.
All rolled into
they
one.
All
the big comeback, the huge lead.
Yep.
You know how I feel about huge leads.
Yep.
And it didn't even cross my mind really until the Mariota deflection to himself.
That was the turning point.
And then
point.
I just immediately froze and just had, it was just like I was having the best time in the world and that one play just swung everything and then I was just like, oh my God, it's happening. Here it comes. And I didn't even see it coming. Like, we should have seen it coming. I think we overlooked the playoff curse because we won a fucking stupid game against Houston. Mm. But it is still very much alive and well. And, oh, God, I'm mad at myself. I didn't see it coming. I thought this season would be different. Like, I had, like, a gut feel that this season would be different just because of how shitty the whole season was. Like, hey, this is going to be the season where, you know, something good happens because we're used to these great seasons, like, okay, this is when we turn around, and that's when you're just setting yourself up for heartbreak. So I thought, hey, this season's been really shitty, so we're due for something good at the end, right? But no, it's just the same over and over. It's just, man, I was in a dark place leaving that game, I'll say that.
I mean, this is the first time that I've seen you since we left 6-10.
Well, I'm purposely not letting anybody see me. I didn't want anyone to see me, man. Like, I was so woe is me, like, and that's the kind of things that I hate from people. Like, I just don't want to be around people like that. So when I'm like that, I shut myself off from everybody. I don't want to be that guy around people.
When I knew that you were in a very dark place was when I saw on Facebook your brother asking your mom, "Hey, is Nick okay? Like, where is he?" And she's like, "Oh, I fed him spaghetti." And I'm like, "Oh, good for him. I'm glad he got some of his mom's spaghetti," which is pretty mythical from what I understand.
Yeah.
Putting some context around the curse, if you will. This is the NFL record, 6th straight home playoff loss. The Chiefs are 1-11. In their last 12 playoff games. And a stat from Sam Mellinger, and this is not the complete look at everything that's happened in Andy Reid's playoff tenure, but since 2001, he has lost as the favorite 7 times. He's won as an underdog just 1 time. He's lost 7 of his last 8. This is his 5th one and done, and it's his 13th loss in the playoffs overall, which is 3rd most in NFL history. Now,
let's make something perfectly clear, though. Andy Reid was winning playoff games before he came to Kansas City.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't one and done when he was in Philadelphia. They went to 4 straight NFC championships. The Chiefs can't sniff an AFC championship.
Right.
He went to a Super Bowl. He was winning a playoff game pretty much every year, at least one. And, you know, at the end, he had a couple playoff. One of those favorite losses was on the road at Arizona in the NFC Championship. And then the other one was with Mike Vick against Aaron Rodgers in his magical run. So the real stink didn't hit Andy Reid until he came to Kansas City, of course.
Right.
In case you were wondering.
He
still has a winning playoff record, I think, unless it's...
I'm not sure. I was just pulling that straight from an article from Bellinger. I didn't
he's probably about 500 now.
I didn't do any research.
No, me neither.
A quote from Twitter. I don't want to get my hopes up because I'm a Chiefs fan. From, I don't remember the handle. His name is Gilbert. So I'm just going to say it was Gilbert 69420.
Gilbert Godfrey.
But.
And let me just say, I told people like that all season to shut their mouths and to blow it out their ass. And I was wrong. I was wrong. You guys win. It's not how I would choose to go through a season, like with that doom. But, you know, I was the one with my heart broken after the playoff game, and you guys probably weren't.
So, one of the things, so you mentioned the Mariota, like, throwing the touchdown to himself, that was sort of the turning point
so
for
ridiculous.
You.
Was that a third and goal or a fourth and goal, by the way? I'm going to ask a lot of questions because I didn't pay attention to any analysis like the 3 days after.
Third and goal, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah, you and I reacted to the game differently. You,
it was third goal,
stayed under the covers probably and didn't see the light of day.
I went to work. I kept my mouth shut and did my job. That was my whole focus. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to hear what you have to say. Trust me, I'm not listening. You can talk to me if you want.
I could just imagine customers coming up and being like, all right, so, and you're just like, la, 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 la. Nope, can't hear you.
Yeah, I just stared right through him.
So.
I was downright catatonic that night, though. I was.
Yeah. I mean, I can imagine.
Not pretty.
So, look, the Mariota touchdown made it 21-10. When I knew that the Chiefs were probably going to lose, or just the dread really sank in, was the following Chiefs drive. They basically go three and out. They get these weird penalties. There's the muffed punt. We ultimately get the ball, and then we miss the field goal.
Mm-hmm.
That was immediately following the Mariota touchdown. So, yep. The first punt, Colquitt gets interfered with, but then they threw some flag on a leagueway, so we had to punt again. We thought we had a first down, and then we have to punt again, and the Titans
left
the punt.
Okay, so there's a lot of, like, mysterious calls.
Yeah, there were. A lot of mysterious calls.
Well, and then we kind of talked about doing a podcast, and I was trying to think about, like, the bad calls. And there's obviously the first half one, which is maybe, like, the worst call that's ever been made in the history of football. Because there's...
It's unbelievable.
There's so little explanation for what was called. It makes such little sense that there's... Like, pretty much every single call I can be like, okay, that's what he saw. He was wrong, but that's what he saw. Or here's, I can make an argument for both sides. Like, he's probably wrong, and this is a bit too, you know, touchy-feely, but he made the call on it, and whatever. That one, there's no explanation.
Yeah,
there is zero explanation. I don't think a fumble can happen in the NFL if that's forward progress. Like, I think fumbles are just taken out of the game. Where is it going? Oh, yeah, Morris call. So there was, on that play... Because they ran into the kicker. And yes. I remember celebrating really hard because I was like, okay, we need, like, something good to happen. We need a couple first downs to break this. Like, we'll be fine if just we need something to go our way. And we get that rough running into the kicker. And I was like, yes! Yes, here we go. This is it. And then there's that mysterious roughness call on my guy who I talked up on Kansas City Live Radio. I don't remember his name now. Okay. James Hasty wannabe.
Oh, no, but he's not the one that got flagged on.
Oh, really?
They flagged a league win.
Reeser is who I'm thinking of.
Yeah, Reeser He did get a flag at one point in the
game. That was early in the game, yeah. I thought he got both. Okay.
No, I think that they said number 40, and then they corrected it to 45.
Oh, okay.
And I don't know what happened either way, but it was offsetting penalties. And then we have to turn around and punt again, and they muff the punt. Adoree Jackson muffs the punt, and Chesson is right there in order to prevent him from being able to get the ball, and Reeser recovered it.
Oh, okay. But Chesson made a good play?
Yeah.
Chesson's a great gunner.
Yeah, he's fantastic.
Let's focus on some positives from 2017, huh? How about Chesson? He's a great gunner. That's it.
There you go. The ensuing possession, it was basically just the Chiefs gained a bunch of field position. They started at, like, the 30-yard line, went backwards, and missed the 48-yard field goal. At that
point... Did you say gaining field position by going backwards?
No, they gained field position by punting and then recovering the punt. It was just...
Their three plays were setting up the ball in the middle of the field.
That sequence right there, that's when I was just like, that was just, it was doom. I felt all of it at one time. Like, all of these things just happened right in a row, and then we missed this field goal, and then a few plays later, Derrick Henry with a 35-yard touchdown, and I'm just like, I just can't. I just can't even, I don't know what to do with this.
I think I dropped my knees at that point. I watched a good majority of the fourth quarter at Arrowhead on my knees.
Oof.
Which I think I did for last playoff loss, too. I kind of had some flashbacks to last year.
So, I want to ask you this question. I sent this to, like, five different people.
Okay, hang on. Before that, we're talking about missed calls. Was the two-point conversion fumble not a bad call?
I don't think that it was.
Because his forward progress actually was stopped?
They called that one. That was another forward progress, and I think people just piled on.
Well, yeah, I'm at the game, and I remember celebrating so hard, and then I never heard an explanation.
I mean,
and so I think that's when I was like freaking out on the refs, because it was like, okay, here's the play where, like, I mean, flashbacks once again, this time, good time, to Atlanta last year, like, exact same situation. We're down a point, they're going for two, and we get a two-point conversion return.
I just, like, I do feel like his forward progress was stopped. I heard the argument.
I don't hear anybody talking about it since. Of course, I didn't listen the next 3 days, but since then, like, I've heard, you know, tons of talk about other calls. The Demetrius Harris holding call on, like, the final, I think it was our final drive, was total bullshit. But I don't hear anything about that two-point conversion play.
I think that, like, I mean, I heard people talking about, like, if you're a Titans fan and Mariota gets away from Sorensen, like, because of the type of player that Mariota is, like, you want that to play out. You want the opportunity for him to wiggle free because he has the ability to do that. Mm. But, I mean, Sorensen had a hold of Mariota and spun him around in two or three circles before the ball went out. And this is not, like, very quickly. It was, like, pretty slow. I mean, his forward progress had absolutely stopped.
Okay.
And, I mean, to me, it was like, yeah, it would have been awesome. I would have been very happy, obviously. But, like, that call to me, it was just frustrating that the ball came out and we ended up scoring.
Well, at that point,
you're thinking it's getting called back, but it's like, no, I mean, I could totally see blowing the whistle, blowing that play dead. The other one doesn't make any sense.
Oh, no, there's no explanation for that. So then, of course, we had the gut punch later where they let the fumble when the Titans have the ball in return for a touchdown. They let that one play out. And Arrowhead went nuts, and I pretty much knew. I was like, nah, he had to be down. Like, that looked so late. So people around me were just going insane on that, and I actually didn't react to that one.
I reacted. that was the highlight of the night for me, and then ultimately the low light. I mean, Marcus Peters,
he stripped it,
and meets Derrick Henry and strips the ball out, and then Derrick Johnson returning it. I was screaming and cursing and scared all of the children in the house, crying babies.
Yes.
And, like, parents looking at me like, what is wrong?
Parents involved.
And
all right.
I just, in that moment, especially when they called it back, I was like, ugh, Well, I mean, that the game was clearly over at that point. I mean, it felt like it was over before that, but to have that happen...
Well, it wasn't over yet, but then we let him run for a first down on 3rd and 10. Yeah,
you have to obviously take into context, like, my love for Marcus Peters.
Of
like,
course.
That was...
It would have been the ultimate coming up with the big play at a big time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, shit. If they just... I mean, they usually let those plays run out. And the two-point conversions, did they let that run out? Did they let that play out, or were their whistles blown?
I mean, I think
because he ran the whole way.
Yeah, I
obviously.
Think they were blowing the whistle.
Okay, so if they just let that one play out and kind of just like don't know what to do, like what they do a lot of times, you know, if they go to review, they can't rule forward progress. And I guess it was the right call, obviously. But
yeah.
If they had just let that play out, like they let the later one play out, that would have been a score for us. But
so I asked this question of a number of different people at the Ringer. I was really hoping...
You asked people at the Ringer?
Yes.
Okay.
I sent some tweets to different Ringer employees, hoping to get someone to discuss the following question. Like, basically it was sort of a series of questions. You start with, how good of a coach do you think Andy Reid is? Like, among active coaches, where do you place him? Is it top 5? Is it top 10? Like... I think that most people would agree, and maybe not with this playoff loss fresh in their minds, but you're going to say Andy Reid is, you know, a top 5 or 10 coach in the NFL.
Yeah, and during the season they'll say top 5. After the season they'll say top 10.
Right. But, I mean, so even after the season they're
saying... Draw your own conclusions from that.
Top 10. So, when you're preparing for the game and you're looking at it and saying, like, the Chiefs have every conceivable advantage against Tennessee, and certainly in the coaching department. I know that you had warnings about Dick LeBeau's defense, but the Chiefs, for the most part, I mean, they didn't really have trouble scoring. I mean, clearly they did in the second half, and we can, you know, try to figure that out later. But essentially, the question that I was asking was, what happens to the coaching advantage when games like this occur? Like, how do you explain it? Can you try to put into words what happens when the Chiefs are clearly out-coaching and seemingly, you know, to start, when you get a huge lead, you're out-playing too. What happens to the coaching advantage? This is not... I'm not, like, trying to take a shot at Andy Reid. I'm genuinely puzzled, and I'm, like, curious and trying to search for answers here because, you know, when I'm trying to... I'm asking, like, you know, Bill and Cousin Sal. Like, I'd love to hear them have, like, a meta discussion on...
They're not
if
the ones.
Andy Reid is a top 5 coach...
They're not the ones.
And he's coaching against Mike Mularkey, who, after winning that playoff game, still got fired, which, I mean, frankly, he should have been anyways. But like, I mean... You know, you had jokes about, like, I saw Mellinger tweeted the other day after John Morton got fired, the former offensive coordinator for
John
the Jets.
John Morton.
He said, you know, the NFL offseason has now been highlighted by firings of the team that beat the Chiefs in the playoffs and an offense that scored 38 points and rang up, like, almost 500 yards of offense against the Chiefs.
Yeah.
I mean, and so I look at it and I just, like, I really am curious. Like, can you explain it? And maybe I honestly don't think anybody can. I just think it's interesting.
No, I can. I think the Chiefs are, I was going to say masters, but very, very good at long-term thinking, at long-term adjustments. Hey, this is what we're going to do coming into a season. Here's what we're going to do coming into a game. These first 15 plays. They are not good at adjusting on the fly. They are not good at adapting in the middle of a game. So when things start going awry like that, they just... I just don't think they have it in them, both on offense and defense. I think this is a legit criticism of both Andy and Bob Sutton, that they don't make the necessary adjustments inside the game to what's going on. And look at... No farther... How closely did you watch the Eagles game?
I have
Eagles-Falcons.
Not at all.
Okay.
I did not view a single second of that game.
So, the Eagles came out, and Foles, like, looked as bad as you can look. And they're running these plays, and it's just like, dude, the Eagles don't have a chance. Like, Foles can't throw the ball. And they adjust in the middle of the game, and they're calling all these, everybody's new favorite word, RPOs, and they just go to this offense that's strictly that, pretty much. And Foles just gets comfortable all of a sudden. He just finds a rhythm. Because, like, hey, this is something I've done before. I know what I'm doing. Hey, like muscle memory coming back here. And Doug Peterson made this adjustment on the fly. And I'm watching that like, this is something that the Chiefs do not do. They have a plan A, and their plan A is really good most of the time. They do not have a plan B or C. If plan A fails, what are they going
to
do?
I guess what's strange to me about that, though, is that, like, don't get me wrong. Yes, like, things started to go wrong. But it took a pretty incredible series of events for the Chiefs to go up 21-3 at halftime to ultimately losing that game. And so I don't think that it's necessarily about, like, having to make some very fast adjustment. Oh my gosh, we have to stop the bleeding. Like, it's just like,
well, not a 21-3, though, but they were 21-18, yeah.
I guess I just...
Or 21-16 or whatever it was.
Yeah, I don't... Man, I think that that's the... Like, one of the frustrating things that I walked away from it was just like... I still have no reason to believe that the Titans are a better team than the Chiefs.
No, they're not.
That their coaching staff was better than the Chiefs. And that's where people start throwing, you know, the curse around. But it was just like, I just don't... I walked away from it saying, like, that didn't make sense. Like, I can't, there's not, like, simple math that I can do that can be like, this is how the Chiefs lost. It required so many different ridiculous things, like Mariota throwing a touchdown to himself, or the Chiefs, you know, missing the field goal, or the bad calls. And it was like, if it wasn't for every one of those things, then the Chiefs would have won.
Kelsey getting hurt, Tyreek Hill dropping three passes.
Yeah.
I think there's different discussions to be had on both offense and defense. I thought, I read Seth's article finally earlier today. I was saving it for when we finally had to talk about it, because I just didn't want to before because it was too painful. But he broke down every single offensive play call in the second half, essentially, and just what went wrong. And, you know, all these complaints about Kareem Hunt not getting the ball enough, and Andy getting conservative and all that stuff. And I thought he did a really good job of pointing out why that was all bogus. And it's just these individual plays where different people fuck up constantly. Alex makes the wrong decision on an RPO. Kareem Hunt misses a wide open hole on a run. Orson Welles, Charles, or whatever his name is, drops a pass on 3rd and 2. Brian Witzman misses a block and blows up a whole play. Like, there's just countless errors being made. And it's not as simple as, you know, they didn't give the ball to Kareem Hunt enough. Like, I think that's total bullshit. Do you buy into that? I mean, the final numbers look terrible, obviously. But
I don't not buy into it. Kareem got 5 carries in the final 48 minutes of that game.
Okay, well,
not just the second half. People are saying in the second half. He got 5 carries final 48 minutes of that game.
Okay, well, look into that closer, though. In the first half, you're not complaining about the play calling. They're up 21-3, correct?
Sure, yes.
So then after that, I mean, it was... I don't have the exact number. I believe it was in those 3 drives before the Chiefs' final drives, it was 6 passes and 5 runs.
Well, right, those 3 drives were... basically nothing, and then you'd had like the Chiefs had 3 drives that weren't like they got the ball 4 times,
mm-hmm.
but 2 of them were like sandwiched together, and it was the punt
3 and out
that
three
they
and
then
out.
Had to punt again, and they recovered it, and then they went 3 and out and missed the field goal.
Yeah.
That was essentially one drive. Like, yeah. The Chiefs got the ball 3 times.
Yeah, and they ran and passed like 50-50. Which I think is what you want with a lead going up against a team that has a way better run defense than pass defense. Like, I don't see that as a big problem. But the final numbers look terrible, and that's fine. But I think if you look closer, I just don't have... That's not my complaint.
Well...
I have other complaints.
I would say that... I mean, one of the stats that you and I were pressing as much as we could, both in the podcast with Carrington and then in our own show, and then ultimately turning around and going back in the studio with Carrington talking about it. Like, we mentioned it a dozen times. Tennessee, 32nd in the NFL in passing situations against running backs.
Exactly.
Dead last.
Exactly.
Kareem Hunt got 5 targets.
Yeah.
And you could say just Kareem, like, the entire team. 5 targets.
Entire
5 running backs
yeah.
In the passing game.
Yeah, that's one of my bigger complaints.
Against New England, they targeted running backs 17 times in the passing game.
Which you knew they would. That's like the Patriots staple. And this is something I've wanted for years. I've always wanted a purely receiving back for games like this. It's so advantageous because they have both Deion Lewis and James White that they can just throw to nonstop. We got Kareem Hunt. 5 targets for him, that's about average, I guess. And then Charkandrick West, I don't even know how much he played in that game or anything. I don't remember him doing anything. But we just don't have... Like, I want a guy specifically for that, to attack that. Because I think it's very... Like, the Patriots do it nonstop, and all these other teams do not. Why? So that is one of my legit complaints. So from that Patriots game, they had the huge lead in the game. And you look at their pass-run disparity, and it's way heavy on the pass, just like the Chiefs was. So that's not my complaint. What you're saying, that is my complaint. That's their weakness. Running backs receiving out of the backfield, and we didn't attack it enough.
Yeah, I mean, it looks really bad when you say that in the first half the Chiefs had 16 first downs and over 260 yards of offense, and then in the second half they had 3 first downs and just over 50 yards of offense. What it really boiled down to for me, I think that, like, the number one takeaway that I had from the game was this season ended the way that I knew it was going to end, and it didn't necessarily have to be the big lead and big comeback and heartbreak at Arrowhead, but in a very microscopic sense, the season ended with the Chiefs having the ball and the chance to win, and Alex, in my opinion, Alex specifically coming up short.
Yep.
Because it did not matter, like, all of the other things that happened. Yes, I get it. Like, there were horrible things that happened in that game. Unforgettable moments. Honestly, like, 50 years from now, in our 80s, I will be able to tell you what happened in that Titans playoff game and just be like,
not only that game, a whole bunch of playoff losses.
Right. It was unbelievable.
So Brandon Flowers gets hurt, and then Dunta Robinson has to come in.
Right.
And Kendrick Lewis is playing safety over Hussein Abdullah for some reason.
Yeah. I guess I just...
Oh, that wasn't the Titans game, was it?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, my bad.
Alex finishes the second half, 5 of 10 for 34 yards. I know that Charles had a drop. I know that Tyreek had one drop in the second half. I think the other two were in the first half.
Albert Wilson had 2 drops. I mean, if you want to classify that.
I mean, Albert played every single snap on offense, and he had 2 catches for 26 yards. And there was...
He should have caught the final one.
Basically 3 quarters of football without Travis Kelce. So,
yep.
I mean, Albert Wilson...
Who is... I would call Travis Kelce our best player. Seeing our offense without him, maybe that's reactionary. I think Travis Kelce is...
I don't think he's our best player. I think he's our most difficult matchup.
Most important player kind of thing,
yeah.
But...
I think he's the hardest...
I might put him at number one.
Even more so than Tyreek. He's the hardest guy for anybody to cover.
Yeah, because he's just so unique.
Yeah.
But what you said is the microcosm for the Chiefs season, because every single one of their losses, there's so much bad in,
yeah.
Except for, and even that was a 2-score game, and we're driving with like 8 minutes left, so you're driving to give yourself a chance to get down one, and you're still alive in that game, and they came up short.
Yeah.
So every single one of these losses, everyone, there's all this bad in it, there's some good in it, but it comes down to the offense having the ball in their hands on the last drive, and they don't get it done. And this goes back to my idea that they don't adapt, because they didn't get the job done on any of these final drives. None of them. And in the playoff game specifically, I thought, I mean, Alex was worse than Andy, I would say. I think Andy's taking a lot of heat, but I would say Alex was worse. Just looking at the breakdown of the plays, I think he just, the 3rd and 10 where he bails on the 3-man rush, it's just like, it's so, like, that play alone is just like, All right, Alex, you were fine for 5 years. I don't want to see you ever fucking again because of that one fucking play. You had your chance, and you just shit your pants, and you just pussied out for no fucking reason. Get the fuck out of here, Alex.
I mean, that is not in those words, but I mean, like, it was so apropos of Alex Smith's career and the complaints about Alex Smith. Like
appropriate?
The perfect example of, essentially.
English nerd.
So, I mean, that third down, it's third and 10. It's literally a three-man rush and a spy. And Alex has all the time in the world. There's no one anywhere near him. And it's like, I guess he was looking for his first read, and when it was covered, he just thought that pressure was going to come. Like, I don't know what it was, but he just bailed on it. And it's just like,
we talked about it the whole second half of the season. That's his biggest weakness, is just bailing on clean pockets. Just
and
seeing imaginary rushers that aren't there.
And don't get me wrong, like, I'm sure that there will be times and growing pains of watching Pat Mahomes where something like that is going to happen. There's a learning curve that is going to apply to a guy that's, you know, starting his second, third, fourth, fifth game in his career.
Yeah, sure.
But, you know, we talk about the Chiefs losing six times in 2017 when they had the ball to end the game. I mean, we went 10-6, and if you want to count the playoff game, we went 10-7.
Woo.
So, the one game we mentioned, Dallas, Alex threw a pick, you know, to end the game, essentially.
Yeah.
None of these scenarios, we're not talking about Minnesota getting the ball with 27 seconds and one timeout left, and that's the Chiefs' opportunity to win the game. We're talking about the Chiefs getting the ball with 2 minutes or more in many of these situations with multiple timeouts, and it's really not even being in that much of a rush. No. To end the game with Tennessee, let's not forget that the fumble play, the DJ Marcus Peters play that got called back, that happened with almost 2 minutes left in the game.
Mm-hmm.
The Chiefs got the ball with 6 minutes and all three timeouts.
Damn, that much?
There was 6 minutes on the clock, and we had all of our timeouts, and the Chiefs couldn't do anything with it. It ends up with Alex throwing a ball incomplete.
6-0-6.
So, I mean, I just, like, there's not even that much. Don't get me wrong. It's a playoff game. I get it. I can't. They're like, I'm sure that, you know, Alex's wife would come to me and say, "What would you know about pressure?" But, like, I mean, seriously, like, there's not that much pressure in a situation like that. You have all three of your timeouts. There's 6 minutes left in the game.
No,
like,
well, I think the pressure is magnified because you've blown the lead.
Right. I mean,
and there was a sense in Arrowhead, like, you could. Everybody could feel it coming. There was a sense of doom. But that's not to excuse Alex. I'm not saying that he... Like, it's his job to overcome that pressure. Like, that's... I felt nervous, but I'm not a professional athlete in this situation getting paid $19 million to come through in this situation. He is. This is when he's supposed to come through, is right then. And he went 0-6 on the season. And I kept wanting to give Alex one more chance because I kept seeing kind of different, and I kept wanting to believe, you know, and, you know, he got it, and he failed. He failed spectacularly. And it's,
yeah.
One weird thing is, I was thinking about this, his season last year was like the bizarro season to this year, because his stats were just pitiful, and his stats this year were insane. And yet, in the big drives last year, it seemed like he almost always came through. Like, even in the playoff game, he led them on that touchdown drive. He threw a two-point conversion to tie it. In this game, we were terribly outplayed. He looked bad in that game, but he came through at the end. And I guess that's why I wanted to believe it, because I was seeing these instances like that. Versus Atlanta, he came through, and probably Denver game, probably a bunch of other ones. He came through at the end last year. And this year was the complete opposite. Just awesome stats. You know, throwing downfield, but when it mattered, he couldn't do anything.
So, I mean, safe to say we're done with Alex.
Yeah.
I don't know what's ultimately going to happen as far as the team is concerned. And, I mean, I listened to Therese do a thing yesterday. And
I saw it.
He was talking about how I wouldn't just trade him to Cleveland. And I'm like, why? I mean, he talks about, like, having too much respect for Alex and so on and so forth, but I don't know if it's even worth it. I wanted to talk about how Alex Smith is not an inspirational player, how he doesn't really inspire anyone on the Chiefs, and frankly, he doesn't really strike any fear into opposing defenses either. Like,
he definitely doesn't strike fear.
Essentially, nobody believes in this guy.
See, I disagree with that. I don't think he strikes fear on defenses now, but I do think his teammates have a love for him.
I think they like him and they respect him and admire him, but I don't think that they, like, believe in him. They can't. What has he done to give them that idea?
I mean, he's won a lot of games.
They see the same things that we do.
Well, like, I'm not saying they're not sitting around like, hey, Mahomes is a better quarterback. Like, right. If you talk to them at their homes, in their Mahomes. but, I mean, you see Alex, you know, put his body on the line to pick up a third down. He's come through in the clutch before in his career, before this year. But I don't necessarily agree, but I mean, that's just a small arguing point.
He definitely
doesn't strike fear in opposing defenses.
Right.
They have no problem lining up in nine in the box on a third and one, because it's just like, hey, go ahead, beat us with Alex Smith if you want.
I don't think that he or Andy Reid, and I don't know if this is a chicken or the egg thing, but there's no killer instinct involved with that offense.
No.
I think that someone like Mahomes, like Alex Smith, rubs off on Andy Reid, right? And so it's like Andy, because, and this is my opinion on him, Andy, because he's so good at coaching quarterbacks, a lot of it is that he is willing to adjust everything that the offense does around the strengths of that quarterback. And so he typically does not ask them to do things that they're not good at. And because of the type of talent, raw talent, albeit, but the type of talent that Mahomes has and the type of player that Mahomes is, I think that more will be asked of Mahomes and different things will be asked of Mahomes than were ever asked of Alex. And so I think that Mahomes is the type of player that does have a killer instinct. And so seemingly, you know, that may mean that we're going to see things from Andy Reid that we've never seen before. And
you're going to
feel like Andy Reid suddenly has a killer instinct because that's the type of player that Mahomes is.
Okay, well, on the killer instinct, this is something we've talked about a lot and something I defended a lot, the Andy Reid shutdown mode. Mm-hmm. And I think it was a way, they won a lot of games using it. And I think it works against inferior teams. And, I mean, you could say the Titans are an inferior team, so it should work there. But what I think happened is it got figured out. Like, the Chiefs like to get a two-score lead and then tell the opposing offense, go ahead and run the ball now. Go ahead and run the ball for 8 yards a pop. We're going to let you run time off the clock, and you're going to make a mistake at some point, and we'll, you know, grind out some first downs, and we'll grind this out to a 7-10 point win. Like, that's how they won a ton of games. I think it got figured out. I think they went to it for too long, and the Titans knew in the second half, hey, it's 21-3, but there's still a whole second half, and we'll be able to run the ball 8 yards a pop down the field on these guys. I mean, this goes back to, like, I think the Raiders kind of did it to us last year in the too cold for the Raiders game. Like, they got down big in that game, but kept running the ball and stayed in the game because we let them run for 8 yards a pop. I think it's mostly a defensive thing, a defensive mindset. Mm-hmm. And I think it just got figured out. I think they stuck to that for too long, and the Titans knew how to attack it when they got down. It's almost like they got more comfortable when they got down 21-3 because it's like, okay, now we can run the ball. Yeah. Which is what drives this offense.
Pressure's off at this point.
But, I mean, they still picked up some third and tens, so...
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a team that you would not trade Alex Smith to?
No, I saw a bit of that. No, I don't think so. I mean... Denver doesn't scare me now. I mean, Denver's on the way down. I flip on the radio at random points, and I heard on, I think it was 810, but they were like, they did like a round table, like, right now, who wins the AFC, or no, they said, Alex Smith goes to Denver, who wins the AFC West in 2018? And two of them said Denver, and two of them said Oakland. And fuck, man, I just about lost it. I just about lost it. I was just like, what are you talking about?
First off,
I think it's the Chargers who would beat us out, if anybody. I'm not fearing the Raiders. I'm not fearing Derek Carr. I'm not fearing John Gruden. And I'm not fearing the Broncos because they don't have any talent on their team outside of Von Miller and Chris Harris and Aqib Talib, who is probably going to be gone soon, who I would pick up in a heartbeat, by the way.
There is so much talk about Aqib Talib playing across from Marcus Peters. And like,
one of the things we need to add is some meanness. We need some mean players who aren't going to let us, you know, a 21-3 lead evaporate like
that. Can you imagine?
We're a little too nice out there on both sides of the ball. True. We need some people who aren't nice people.
Man, conversations from the last 10 years,
I know, right?
Of Chiefs football.
I know.
I guess the reason I ask, like, to me, it's send Alex to the highest bidder, and I don't care where that is. There are a lot of people that the only argument that I am willing to entertain at all in regards to sending him to Denver is that you essentially are handing over your entire offense to Denver. It's not just what Alex can do for Denver playing quarterback. It's him being able to relay all the different things that he did as a quarterback with Andy. But because
maybe signals and stuff, but the whole defense the whole offense is going to be changed.
Right. Because you have a different quarterback and whatnot. Like, frankly, to me, it just doesn't. I'm not worried about it because, like, I get to play against Alex Smith twice a year.
Yeah.
Like, he does not strike fear into me at all. I would be delighted to have someone else in the AFC West inherit all of the problems that we've got. And suddenly, people are thinking, I had one guy telling me, if Alex Smith plays in Denver, they will win the Super Bowl. And I'm just like, dude, you're trying to tell me that the Denver Broncos, coached by Vance Joseph and the offense run by Mike McCoy, are going to accomplish things that Andy Reid could not? No!
Well, hold on.
No!
You're talking to a Chiefs fan after this loss, like the week after another playoff loss. Like, I would have said anything. You would not want to hear my thoughts on Patrick Mahomes once we lost that game. That's when I knew I had to stay away from everything, because I saw someone mention Mahomes. I was like, it doesn't fucking matter. We won't win a fucking Super Bowl or playoff game or anything. He's going to fucking suck. That's when I knew I had to, like, take a step back. Like, I can't do media coverage of this. So I get that. Chiefs fans aren't going to act rational, and that's probably an irrational thought. A few things on Alex, though. People may think it's impossible for us to trade him to Denver, but Andy Reid traded Donovan McNabb to the Redskins, so he is not against this type of thing. That's pretty much the exact same situation. The other thing is, there's going to be some dicey moments with this Alex Smith trade. The Chiefs are going to have to act like it's very, very possible that they're going to keep him. So there are going to be some times where we're kind of freaking out because it's like, man, are the Chiefs actually thinking about keeping him? It's going to happen because they have to act like they're going to keep him so that it'll drive the price up. So there's going to be some quotes like, hey, Alex Smith is still our quarterback.
Oh yeah.
There's going to be some other things. And people talk about like the he's still do $2 million. Sometime in the middle of March.
It's a $3 million roster bonus, basically like the new league year.
Okay.
Which is, I think, early to mid-March.
I thought it was $2 million, but that's not make or break.
Certainly not. We gave Tom Bali a roster bonus and then a contract extension when they could have just not done it.
Oh, yeah. I still don't understand that. I still feel like there was further explanation for that because it just didn't make any sense. So yeah, there's going to be some dicey moments this offseason where it looks like it's very likely that Alex Smith is going to come back. And it might be. Fuck, I don't know. I would have bet the farm on Dustin Colquitt not playing under a $5 million contract for a punter, and he stayed on the roster all season. Like, they don't exactly view money the same as we do. Like, we kind of look at it, we're going to axe all these players, and they don't necessarily agree all the time. But I'm just warning everybody now, there's going to be dicey moments where it looks like it's possible that Alex Smith comes back. And we're just going to have to persevere through it.
I have a couple more questions, I guess, about the offense. I know we need to talk about the defense, too, though.
Yeah.
The Andy Reid-Matt Nagy relationship... For the second year in a row, Andy Reid, in some capacity, handed over some piece of play calling to his offensive coordinator. I want to ask you this question, and you may not know how to respond to it, but do you think Andy gave Matt Nagy control of the offense because he, like, believed in Matt Nagy, or because he thought that it would just improve the team? Like, did Andy look at it and say, this guy is brilliant, I need to give him the offense? Or, like, I'm not getting it done, and we need to try something else?
I would say he thought he wasn't getting it done. But I also think there's a cloud of mystery. I don't think any of us know about the play calling.
I'm not sure.
First off, I think it's overblown, because I don't think the play calling was, like... so bad in the second half and so great for these 5.5 games or whatever.
The load, like, bad play call in the second half was the 3rd-and-1.
All right, well, let's get in. I want to talk about that, because I keep hearing that.
Oh, it was terrible.
Okay, so the Titans have a 9-man box. I don't think the Chiefs are running up the middle. It's like 1.5 yards, correct? It's like 3rd-and-1.5.
I think it was about that. I mean,
so what do you... There's 9 men in the box... I'm confident that the Chiefs don't pick it up just running up the gut. Do you agree with that or no?
I don't know.
Is that
know.
Still your play call?
I'm not... I don't know what my play call is, but I can tell you that it's not, like, short side of the field running an option when there are that many people that are able to try to get through the traffic. I mean, to me, like, if you want to keep the ball in Alex's hands, then I'm probably going to try, like, a bootleg or something. I'm going to do some fake stretch play and then let Alex try to sneak out the backside. But for the most part, I'm probably either running it up the gut or I am going to try, like, a quick pass.
Okay, so this is a theme of maybe that way. I can't really remember. Mostly the divisional round. But teams on 3rd-and-1 were struggling very hard. All across the board. The Steelers had a couple... plays that looked crappy. The Saints threw a fucking receiver pass on 3rd-and-1. Like, teams weren't picking up 3rd-and-1s, and they were making these, you know, what do we call it? Like, getting cute on 3rd-and-1.
Overthinking.
Because, well, I think it's just harder to pick up 3rd-and-1 running up the gut. Like, I don't think there's a right answer here. Like, people want to think 3rd-and-inches, I'm QB sneaking it every time. But I don't think the Chiefs situation was that. I don't think most of these were. But with teams loading up in the box like that and just selling out to stop the 3rd-and-1, I don't know what the right answer is. Because I saw the Steelers pitch outside. That didn't work. I saw the Steelers just call a drop back pass. That didn't work. I saw the Chiefs try and run an option. That didn't work. Like, I have a problem with every single play call you're going to make in that situation. You're going to run it up the gut? I don't think you get it. You're going to run this option? I don't think you're going to get it. Are you going to call a drop back pass? That's the easiest one to criticize, because you're dropping back to pass on 3rd-and-1 now. Like, that's one of my criticisms always. That's one of my steadfast criticisms. Like, I don't know what you want to call here. It's not easy. And I don't have a solution here other than 3rd-and-1s are tough. And I get that play call looked terrible, but I don't know what to call.
With me, because you don't like any 3rd-and-1 call.
I'm telling you, I have a problem with every 3rd-and-1 play. Right. Well, there's a huge problem in general of people criticizing play calls. Hey, that play didn't work. Bad play call. Every time. Every time. Oh, man, they ran up the middle on 3rd-and-1. I didn't like that. I didn't like that play call. Like, no shit. You just saw it not work. Of course, they didn't fucking like it.
The Chiefs have made some changes on their coaching staff, and I don't know if it was necessarily them making changes. Matt Nagy takes the head coach position in Chicago. And one Brad Childress decides that he's going to step away from the team and retire. He was the quote-unquote passing game coordinator.
wasn't he a spread game analyst or something?
Something along those lines.
I'm sure he played a big part in helping Andy develop his, you know, new look, West Coast spread, option run, RPO offense kind of thing.
Well, they lose those two coaches. One of my favorite guys on the staff, not just like remaining after those two guys left, but like literally offense, defense, whatever. One of my favorite guys on the staff, Eric Bieniemy. He gets promoted to offensive coordinator. I don't know if this is a good move or not. I can't tell you anything
about it. I don't either. People seem to like it, but I don't.
I like it because I
like... Why do you like Bieniemy? Because the running backs have been good?
The running backs have been good, but he's one of the few guys out there on the sideline that is, like, intense and gets after it. And Andy, don't get me wrong, like, we've seen Andy be pretty red-assed about different things.
Red-assed?
But with Bieniemy, like...
What is that? Is that a chimpanzee reference or whatever monkey it is with the red ass?
That'd be a baboon, but no. Baboon. No, he, like, that just means, like fiery guy.
Like he's got fire coming out of his ass?
Yeah, sure, there you go.
Okay. Must have ate at Hooters.
Bieniemy's just the type of guy that, like, when I saw that they did hire him, like, the thing I said was accountability. He's going to hold guys accountable. He's gonna chew you if you do something wrong. He's going to yell at you. It's not going to be comforting. I mean...
Which is what you need, because Andy's a player's coach.
Kareem, when he fumbled that first play, it was, I can't believe you did that, but get your ass ready, because we're going to feed you anyways. Like, deal with it. Get over it right now.
Okay.
Not like, oh, are you okay? It's going to be okay, son. And like,
well, there's definitely too much niceness going on. Bob Sutton's nice. Andy Reid is nice. Matt Nagy's probably nice. He seems nice.
Seems like a nice guy.
But you want like a good cop, bad cop here, right?
Yeah.
Like
Andy's
the player's coach, so the people beneath him, you need to have some hard asses.
Yeah.
Like you need someone who's going to chew someone out. So if he's going to do that, that's fine.
And then taking Bieniemy's former job as the running backs coach is a guy that I think a lot of people are excited about. Deland McCullough. He was the running backs coach at Indiana for guys like Tevin Coleman and Jordan Howard, who have both been, I think, by all accounts, pretty sensational.
Did you say Tevin Coleman?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He's my guy.
So he and Jordan Howard both went to Indiana and were coached by Deland McCullough. And then he just finished his first year at USC, and I don't know the guy's name, but their running back went off and... people are really liking him to be a pick in the top two rounds, and he seems like a pretty great fit. The other move that they made was hiring a quality control coach on the defensive side of the ball that came from Georgia, and the move that they haven't made that I think a lot of people were hoping and expecting was firing Bob Sutton.
So I was off Twitter for a long time. I looked up Bob Sutton at one point because I was just like, there's surely some Bob Sutton news, and saw a fake Rappaport
Bob Sutton
tweet
retired.
That Bob Sutton retired.
Oh, man.
And I thought that for like 3 days. Oh, and I was listening to radio and stuff like here and there, and I was just like...
Why aren't you guys talking
about this? Well, yeah, so I was so confused, and I'd see a tweet, and I was like, that's weird. Like, why are we still talking about, like, he's gone?
Oh, he got... That tweet got a bunch of people. It got, like, Kirkhoff. I think it got Therese. Like,
yeah.
Like, people were like...
It got me. And I was on Twitter so little that I believed it for 3 straight days. And so imagine my surprise when I come back. Like, wait, nothing's happened with Bob Sutton?
Yeah.
I am firmly in the Bob Sutton needs to go camp. Personally.
I tell you right now, I'm firmly in the he's not going to camp now. I mean, I think most people should be there at this point. I mean, unless the Chiefs are just going to be really late to the party.
Yeah, I mean, I think the hope was their guy is still in the playoffs.
It's that there's
just
a couple,
getting narrowed down.
Yes, but there, I mean, there's a couple other options that are out there too. Like, I mean,
Pagano.
Well, Pagano's out there. People have mentioned John Fox. People have mentioned Jack Del Rio. But. I mean, a couple...
John Fox. I can't imagine him taking a coordinator job, does he?
I don't want John Fox at this point. But I'll tell you a couple things that we have to keep in mind. One of which I hate, and the other one I really like. The one that I hate. Steve Spagnuolo. He's connected to Andy Reid. I do not like the idea of Steve Spagnuolo. I think the only time that he has had a good defense in the last 12 years was a Giants defense that had a huge influx of talent and had a good year. And then this year, with all of the same talent and no injuries on their defense, the team just completely fell apart. And if you want to talk about, McAdoo and whatnot, but like, I am not interested in Steve Spagnuolo. He has had as many bottom 10 defenses as he has had top 10 defenses. And frankly, I think that his success has been solely predicated upon talent and has nothing to do with his ability to coach players.
You said he was the Giants coordinator this year. I got it.
Yeah.
Okay, I used to love Spagnuolo because of that Giants team taking down
Tom Brady twice.
Yes. But I think it kind of gave him credit for being like he developed that defensive line. But it looks like he is a secondary guy in trade.
Yeah.
So the credit for that wouldn't go there. That's fine. I don't.
So, but the reason I say Steve Spagnuolo and mention that he's sort of hanging in the balance right now is because the Giants still have not hired a head coach. And so all of the guys that are on staff, the only person that isn't on staff is McAdoo, and everyone else is just sitting there waiting for the new coach to come in and say, I'm going to keep you or I'm not.
Huh, okay.
The same thing is happening in Arizona, who has not hired a head coach, and their defensive coordinator, James Betcher, who is the guy that both Craig and
Bet your ass.
Yep. Bet your ass, indeed. This is one of the guys that Craig and I were kind of circling as our top potential replacement.
What's his name?
James Betcher, as Dirk Googles live on Amateur.
I haven't looked at any of this shit. I'm not ready for the offseason.
James Betcher is getting ready to turn 40 years old. He's been Arizona's coordinator for the past 3 years. And obviously everybody knows that Arizona has a very, if nothing else, creative defense.
So he was an outside linebackers guy, was his position before becoming D coordinator.
Yeah.
So the Cardinals, you're looking at Chandler Jones.
But I mean,
he was already kind of developed, but he's had some really good seasons.
Well,
Marcus Golden, I think, was pretty good.
Yeah, he kind of pulled him out of nowhere. And I mean, but they've had, like, Arizona's just a very, very interesting team, the way that they've aligned their defense, and they like a lot of the guys with flexibility, given the middle linebacker that's basically a safety,
Deion
Buchanan.
Yep.
They've used a lot of undersized guys and been really successful. I mean, you might be seeing middle linebacker Eric Berry if James Betcher has his way. But yeah, I mean,
as long as I'm seeing Eric Berry, I don't care what position he's playing. He can play quarterback for all I'm concerned.
Right,
just get him on the field.
Just come back, please. One of the interesting things, Joel was on 610. I think it was last Wednesday, not this week, but the previous week, and they were asking him about, like, what do you think is going to happen with Sutton? And he's like, you have to understand that I don't think it's just a football decision. I think it's a business decision. Because of the different losses that the Chiefs have incurred, and especially the last 2 years losing the way that they did in the playoffs at home, I mean, the Chiefs have allowed 171 and 202 rushing yards in the last two postseason games at home. Back-to-back years, 171 and 202. That's 185 yards a game if you're wanting to do some math at home, folks.
I can't believe the Titans ran for more yards than the Steelers last year.
It's unbelievable. They ran for like 156 yards in the second half. So,
At least we didn't make any adjustments between, last year's playoff loss and this year's playoff loss.
What Joel said was that he thought that the fan reaction would be toxic.
I saw that. It's a good take.
I don't think that you can do it when you have to continue to try to endear yourselves to fans. And if the conversation that's happening at Arrowhead, among the likes of Clark and Andy and Mark Donovan is, we've got this campaign that we're ready to roll out specifically built around Patrick Mahomes, and people are going to be excited no matter what, I mean, maybe that's the case. I don't know.
Yeah, I think people will be so, encapsulated. I don't think that fits. They're going to be so wowed by Patrick Mahomes that I'm not sure they'll care once the season rolls around. And I get the defense of Bob Sutton, I guess. I'm not really here for it. Most of it I see, I scoff at pretty hard.
I don't like any of the war path that different guys are on trying to, like,
yeah, Gary,
like derail. I've seen Gary.
Gary McKenzie. I love Gary McKenzie. He's great. I'm not with him on this
whatsoever. He's working
whatsoever.
So hard I'm to unravel him. People's complaints about Bob Sutton.
It's just like picking stats to make him look good, and I'm not really here for it.
I mean,
I love what Gary does.
About the second half, I was just like, I don't want to hear it, Seth. Yeah. Chiefs fucked up. I don't want to hear about, oh, it was execution or whatever. When you talked about that, you're like, Seth did a great job. I'm like, I don't care.
Well, but that's important. That's important because Andy Reid is a huge part of our future. So I do want to know if, like, what, I mean, this happened twice under Andy Reid. So I think the inspection of the role Andy Reid played in it is very important. Bob Sutton, but that's because Andy Reid brings all this stuff to the table. So we have to, I mean, we want to keep him. So we have to look closely at him. Bob Sutton doesn't bring anything to the table.
There are some people that don't want to keep Andy Reid. That has been
a
very legitimate conversation. I would say not among legitimate people, but a very legitimate conversation.
That's fine. I will say I have questioned him more than I probably have his entire tenure with the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
So I might be lower on Andy Reid right now. And his worst move would be keeping Bob Sutton. Or keeping Alex Smith.
I would say keeping Alex Smith would be worse than keeping Bob Sutton,
so that's,
in my opinion.
That would be his worst move. And I think I'm mad at Andy for letting this happen. Like, the mentality of the team shouldn't be soft enough for this to happen. And I think that does fall on him. So I get it, but I'm not at that point, no. But Andy Reid brings all this to the table. He's a QB maximizer. Every single QB he's ever had played his best under Andy Reid than he did with anybody else. Pretty much across the board.
Except for Nick Foles. But
that's
fair.
But I don't think... Did Foles play much with Andy?
Not really.
Okay. And then he dominates the division. You always know that you're going to do good against division teams. Even going back... I don't have the number in front of me, but I believe that's true going back through Philadelphia. But certainly here in Kansas City, he has just dominated the division. And if you take the Peyton games away, he's really dominated the division. So he's bringing all this to the table. Bob Sutton not bringing anything to the table. He's just been living off of the talent that we had for so many years that isn't there now.
Yeah, I mean,
I get the reasons for, like, he struggled this year because we don't have the same amount of talent. Yeah, but he only did good the years before because he had all that talent. And because we had, like, Tom Ollie and Justin Houston both rushing from the outside.
He's Alex Smith. Like, you're trying to build up all these things around it,
yeah.
And when the conditions are perfect, like, it can go pretty well.
Yeah.
And I mean, maybe that's the case for a lot of coordinators, but, like, that's why someone like Betcher, where I'm looking at, like, a guy that's, you know, about to be 40 years old and has already been a coordinator for 3 years and has had to get really creative. Don't get me wrong, Arizona has not been struggling with that, you know, a lack of talent, but, I mean, they also started Marcus Cooper for an entire season opposite Patrick Peterson. Now, you had Patrick Peterson out there, but, like, the guy has had to get really creative in order for Arizona's defense to be able to stick in games.
Patrick Peterson did travel with the number one receiver, though.
Yeah.
An important caveat.
Caveat. So, here, the other side of that...
I come to this podcast to learn words from you.
There you go.
I'm glad you're in school so I can, you know, I'm getting dumber by the moment.
Sounds good. Well, all right, so the other side of the Sutton coin is talking about the talent, or lack thereof, on the Chiefs' defense.
Yep.
This is my strongest take of the day.
All right.
Everybody ready?
Glad we stayed in for the end. Everybody
ready? If Chris Jones is your best defensive lineman, your defensive line sucks.
Oh!
You have a lot of room to improve. And I think people would say unequivocally that Chris Jones is, at the very least, our most talented defensive lineman. And they may not say best, but the Chiefs have a problem on the defensive line.
He'll certainly be the best one returning.
And even if I like Benny Logan, even if at times I like Alan Bailey, even if at times I like Raheem Nunez-Roches...
I think we missed him.
I think we missed him in that game. Oh, I do too. Even if at times I like Jenkins or whoever, like, there are a bunch of guys on this team that every once in a while they show up and they make plays and they're like, hey, I like that guy. They have problems. And it's not just the defensive line, it's in the entire front seven. So I want to ask you this question.
That goes back to my, like, too nice. We're not getting enough out of Chris Jones. Like, he... For the good plays he makes, we should be getting more out of Chris Jones from an every game basis. And we're not.
Some of that has to do with the person that is playing to his right, which is always a mixture
of
Tamba and Frank Zombo.
Frank Zombo going on year six.
D Ford. I want to ask you this question, and I want you to really think about it. You don't have to like. We can sit here. We can have 10 seconds of silence on Amateur Hour.
Really think about it for 10 seconds.
How many of the Chiefs' front seven players? And if you want to look at this through the lens of, like, guys that you know are going to be playing for this team next year, or guys that you assume are going to be playing, or guys that you want to be playing in the front seven next year, you can handpick the Chiefs' front seven made up of guys that are a part of this roster right now.
Okay. Well, let me say off the bat, I don't think Bailey or Logan is coming back.
Okay.
I think we'll cut Bailey, and I don't think Logan will be back. I'll say that off the bat.
How many of the Chiefs' front seven players are you truly, bottom line, confident about? Not whether they return, but like, this guy's going to come to work, and I think he's going to do a good job, and I don't think that he needs, like, you know, competition or whatever. Like, this guy is a starter, and I'm very happy with that player. How many guys in the front seven?
I mean... Does value come into play? Chris Jones. Reggie Ragland, I guess. I've seen no defensive snaps, so I'm a little disheartened that we gave up so much on the ground again when Reggie Ragland was supposed to be the guy that kind of fixed this. But I do like Ragland going forward. And then Justin Houston, for as long as we can... Until we can get out from under his contract, Justin Houston.
So, I mean, I figured that...
So, three.
Those are the three guys that, like, most people...
I think that's pretty universal, isn't it? Yeah.
Right. I mean...
Who else? I mean, that's...
My answer is zero.
Oh!
And I know that that might seem hyperbolic and coming off the loss that, like, it's just a downer or whatnot. Like, I think that Chris Jones has the ability to become a really great player. Am I confident that he's going to? No, I'm not. I don't think that the Chiefs are in a position where they should just say, you know, Chris Jones is a star in the making and, you know, we're set at that position for the next 10 years. I don't feel that way about
it. I think he has the talent to be.
He does. I think he absolutely has the talent to be. But
he needs to be coached up.
Yeah. I don't feel... I love Reggie Ragland, but, like, I don't know what to say about Reggie Ragland. I mean... I can't tell you that Reggie Ragland is going to be a great NFL player. There are a lot of things to like about Reggie.
A great player. He's a player that I want out there on a rookie deal.
Oh,
I think we saw enough from him this year that he should get better in this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he didn't spend the offseason with us.
Right.
So give him a whole training camp and stuff. And I think Reggie Ragland, I'm confident in him going forward.
Justin Houston, I mean... He just played the most snaps.
Let me pull up SpotRac real quick.
He's just played the most snaps in a season since 2014.
I think we got one more year of Justin Houston until it's realistic to get off one row. But
yeah.
Not exactly thrilled with Justin Houston. He's another guy that could probably benefit from some coaching. Here's one thing. I watched the fucking Patriots. We know the Patriots by this point. I saw the guys getting sacks on Marcus Mariota, and they had like seven, I think. This isn't elite talent getting after Marcus Mariota, the same quarterback that we had a 21-3 lead against and couldn't pressure. At least I think. I didn't watch anything. But they schemed it up. They schemed pressure. Like, they'd still found a way to get pressure without the talent. Why aren't we doing that? Why do we have all these instances with players that we like? Justin Houston played all season this year, and we still sucked at getting pressure when we knew the other team was passing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe my number one criticism of Bob Sutton. One G of criticisms of Bob Sutton.
I just...
But I just... This happens again and again, and it's just like, you know, one big sack would change things here. And you know, we just let teams get down the field.
There's a couple things. So, like, I think that right now, as far as, like, penciled-in starters are concerned, you could say that Houston and Ragland, I think that Pierre Lewis is going to get a new contract and that they plan on starting he and Ragland next year. That's my guess. They have to give him a contract. They don't have to, likely, but yeah. Like, in order for him to be on this team next year, he is required to have a contract. He's an unrestricted free agent. So,
how old is he?
26 or I mean, whatever. He's
been in the league. I mean, he has to be 4 years in the league to be unrestricted.
That was one of the things that they talked about in the trade of DJ Alexander was,
oh, yeah,
you still have DJ for like 2 years or whatever, and you're giving up a guy, or you're getting a guy in return that will be unrestricted. The other spots, I mean, Chris Jones is probably a starter.
He's definitely a starter.
They don't know who's going to play the other outside linebacker spot, and don't know who's going to play two of those defensive line spots.
Pierre Louis, for the record, just finished his fourth year in the league. Came into the league at 20. So he's super young.
Okay.
I would say he's one of a few guys that's kind of sitting there that if they can improve upon, they'll do it. But it's not like, it's not top three priority. Or
him, Ramiq Wilson, Marcus Ligwe.
I think Ramiq's gone.
You know, like, I don't know. I don't know what their plans are.
I say Roches is another guy that, like, for now, he's a starter. We could replace him, but I'd say more likely than not, he starts next year.
And I just don't feel great about that, personally. I mean,
I'm fine with players like that on a rookie deal. I'm fine.
I guess I just, if the Chiefs are bringing back Bob Sutton,
ugh,
and there's not a pretty serious change in either just the players that they have, if you want to say talent, like, sure, of course you want more talent, but, like, there have to be some changes, be it in personnel or in coaching, and frankly, I would like to see it happen in both. I don't have a whole lot of faith right now, and I don't really have, generally speaking, like a whole lot of excitement about the defense.
No.
I think that the Sorensen contract doesn't look as great as it did before the year, but he also played a lot more than you expected him to.
I've seen a lot of Sorensen hate. People turned on Sorensen. Did he have a bad game or something?
I don't know if Eric Murray is a football player or not.
We can save 1.8 on Sorensen and cutting him this year. He's going to be around.
Yeah, I mean,
hopefully he's the third safety.
No idea what to think of Eric Murray.
I don't like Murray.
I don't think that they have another corner outside of Marcus Peters. I don't think they have one. There isn't a guy on the roster.
No, given how they don't like Terrence Mitchell so much, I mean,
all those guys are free agents. You're basically looking at, like...
Was Revis horrible in the game?
I don't...
How are they completing these third and longs?
I don't think that they were, like, really completing passes. Mariota got a few of his legs, and they ran a few, too.
Delaney had one on a third and 10. I guess that's not a corner.
Walker, yeah, I mean, I don't know. Nelson was rated really highly in that game, so I guess I forgot Nelson. You've got Nelson and Peters, but... I think that the defense needs a pretty serious influx of talent, and between the draft and free agency, that's where my focus would be. I mean, the only positions offensively that I think, like, need to be addressed, quote unquote,
left guard.
I think that they need a left guard. I think that,
and he might be in the building.
Need a tight end.
Tight end too.
And I don't know who it is or how they want to go about that, but I think they need a left guard. And a tight end, and give me a veteran tight end,
Anthony Fasano as your tight end too.
Right,
pay him $3 million.
Mercedes Lewis, I don't care who it is, like just some 30-year-old guy.
Mercedes, he is kind of Jason Dunn, isn't he?
He's still
is good, that what he is? Man.
I can't believe that guy's still playing.
I know. I heard Simmons like talk him up in one fight because he's like Mercedes Lewis is good. I was like, I don't think that's true.
It's not true, Bill. It's not true.
The offense, I mean, a few pieces here and there.
I don't...
And also, like, the least important pieces. I mean, a guard.
Yeah,
and your backup tight end.
Backup quarterback, I think, is something that... Like, definitely. It can't be Tyler Bray, you know?
No.
I saw people say, like, they were talking about Chase Daniel,
Yeah!
Honestly, you know...
Bring him in and start him week one!
You know who I think would be awesome? I don't know... I mean, his age is way up there, and I don't know what his health is going to be like and whatnot, but if, I guess at least after what I saw this year...
Fitz?
I love the idea of Josh McCown.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, I thought McCown was tremendous. And I tell you what, Morton?
Good teacher for Patrick Mahomes, too. Give me Josh McCown around Patrick Mahomes for at least a year.
I'll take...
McCown should start, though, shouldn't he?
McCown seems like
he should go to a team that has, like, a young quarterback in development.
Go back to Cleveland.
Which is Mahomes, but he wouldn't start over Mahomes, I guess. Yeah. To mentor Alex Smith.
I would take Morton on this staff in some capacity in a heartbeat. I thought what he put together with the Jets this year offensively was phenomenal. I mean, truly, like, a really brilliant season. And their offense, I think, is ready to take some major steps backwards. Did you see Robbie Anderson's arrest?
No.
Ooh, it ain't good.
He
went all in on a police. Yeah, let's just, I'll leave that for you guys to go enjoy on your own if you haven't seen it. Anderson, tough arrest.
How did they fire the Jets offensive coordinator?
I have no idea.
I was stunned by that. Right. I was like, man, that's one of the guys I'd keep an eye on for head coaching jobs. Like, he did a great job.
Yeah, fantastic.
Okay.
I mean, what else you got?
I don't know, but I'm enjoying this.
I think that, that's good. I know we've got...
You're just firing stuff. I haven't planned anything. You're just firing things at me.
I know that we're, there's plenty of off-season time. I know that we'll talk about a lot of different things.
Well, but this is our last chance to talk, probably for a while.
Yeah.
You probably won't hear from us what's the next thing that happens?
Free agency starts in March, basically.
Yeah.
This
is the dark time. Man, I hate the end of football seasons. It's just... Even when we lose in, like, respectable fashion, I get, you know, pretty down when football ends. It's always hard when it ends like that.
Yeah.
I mean, that was part of it. Oh, man, I remember sitting in the stands and being just talking to myself under my breath, getting so excited for Chiefs, Patriots. And to have that week taken away was pretty big hit.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of the things. I was just like, let me just... dream for this week. Like, let me think it's possible for this whole week. And we might get creamed by the Patriots, and that's fine. Because then we know they're a better team, and once and for all, and whatnot. But to not even get that was tough.
If anything good has come out of the last 2 years of losing at home, it's Dave Hewlett's Lonely Grill photos outside of Arrowhead. Having another one, like, two consecutive years now... And getting, like, an equivalent... Dude, the pictures are so great. They're phenomenal.
Mm.
It certainly encapsulates the heartbreak and the frustration.
Was there another one or something? I didn't see this.
Yeah. Second. It's good. It's very good. Mm. Random Dave Tube Taub question. What do you think our average starting field position is?
I saw you on this.
After.
And I was laughing because it's such a me thing to look at. And it's something that you would usually look at and be like, I don't care about this.
Well, I'm saying.
I don't care about this. And so I was really having a good time looking in-depthly at the kick return issues.
Like four days after
the soul-crushing loss.
I didn't look at it. I'm just saying in terms of, it's like, man. Every time that we return the ball, it's just not good.
It's not just us. It's every team, man. Nobody should be returning kicks out of the end zone with it going to the 25. When you take kicks, they routinely go to the 15, and then you throw in the high chance of a penalty on that, and the chance you can start inside the 10. It's like one of the biggest flaws in coaching right now is that they haven't adjusted to the starting at the 25, which is... I think it works if you got a Tyreek Hill back there, but if you don't, it's wrong.
Yeah.
You shouldn't be doing that.
Well, somebody came to me and said that Akeem Hunt was like in the top something or other because he had like 24.4 yards.
And I saw you question that.
And I'm like, okay, but
it does include their yards in the end zone.
Well, it wasn't even, like, really a question. It was like, even if it starts at the goal line, the 24.4 is not the 25.
Yep. And that still doesn't account for penalties that you...
Right. It just like, that's, to me, I'm just like, I don't.
Which
I don't,
is funny, because that's like a Taub. That's like one of his main things.
And that's maybe like they just struggled this year or something. Like, it may be this year was an outlier because we just didn't have great kickoff returns much at all, or punt returns, really.
And we did have first-team, special-team players and cut them every single year. I mean, eventually that catches up with you, no matter how great Taub is. And I mean, then you take, I think it's as simple as taking Tyreek Hill off it.
Yeah.
You can tell me Akeem Hunt's good. Tyreek Hill's better.
Did you? Okay. Last couple things on special teams, and we're going to go.
The kicker curse. Of course it happened. We talked about it. Carrington talking about. No, I'm not worried at all because he hit this kick on Monday Night Football. I was like, man, you're not a Chiefs fan because you're asking this question and now bringing this up. We should have seen it coming.
Harrison Butker.
He's fine.
Oh yeah, no, I think Butker's good. I mean, I'm still not worried about him.
Not surprising at all. Like watching that kick go up, like he's gonna miss this. Dong. Yep, there it is. And a really good angle from it too. I was in that end zone.
Butker finished the season 38 of 43.
Wow.
He played 15 games. And he attempted 43 field goals.
Wait. His first 15 games.
His first game was against Redskins. Washington.
Yeah.
That was... So he missed weeks 1, 2, and 3.
Okay.
And then had a playoff game. So 15 football games.
That's 14, but who's counting?
17 minus 3 is 14. Plus a playoff game is 15.
It was not 17 games in the regular season.
Shit.
Yeah.
14 games.
For 17 weeks.
Butker, 38 of 43.
I'm trying to make your point better here.
In 14 games. 43 field goal attempts. Holy cow.
Holy cow.
That's a lot.
We couldn't get one to go in. We needed a whole half.
I think Butker's fine. Are the Chiefs going to have a new putter next year?
God, I hope so.
I had basically just suggested like the Chiefs are going to have a new punter next year, and our buddy at Pulse of the Chiefs, Joe Dice, was like, you think Colquitt's done? And I'm like, I'm not going to pay him $3 or $4 million to come back.
I think the idea of paying a punter $5 million is dumb. I don't care about how Colquitt punts. He ain't that good.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them potentially signing a free agent and like putting a little bit of money into the punter position, but I just imagine that they're probably going to undrafted free agent or like 6th round pick a punter, and so he's just going to be the starter and we'll pay him $500,000 next year.
This is something that me and Craig Stout looked into. Because it was the he loves the Texas punter that everybody loves. I've seen this guy at all. There's a Texas punter who like he got player of the game in his bowl game, and he's like supposed to be this best punter in years. So for some reason, we looked up like punters who got drafted.
Is he Shane Leckler's son?
Shane Leckler was drafted, actually. He was one of the good ones. But like from the punters drafted in the last 15 years, they all suck. It's this weird thing where you look at this list and you're
except
like, who are these? Well, that's 15 years ago, pretty much.
Did his brother get drafted? His brother's.
I don't think so, no.
Oh.
It's everybody's like, look at this. There's a website out there that has like a list of specialists who've been drafted, and it's such a list of misses. It's like unbelievable. So he's been all in on drafting the Texas punter, and then we did some little research on it. That's what I do in my free time. That's why I'm depressed when football season ends, because I can't look up punter draft history anymore. Just pick up an undrafted guy.
Was my assumption, was just some cheapo option. That
or pay Colquitt less. I mean, he owes us one. Can't believe he played out the year on a $5 million contract.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, I guess so.
There's a lot of John Dorsey bashing when people are really digging into the cap now.
Well, there's things going around right now. It's a lot of players on the last year of their deal.
Yeah.
So it looks bad. But they're all, I mean, they all have no dead money. Like, Derek Johnson, yeah, he has $10 million on the cap right now, but no dead money. Like, that's not bad. That's what you want.
Right. I mean, I think that there's a lot of people that probably want to hear about who should we cut and who should we bring back, and so on and so forth.
We will do a show on that.
I'm sure that will happen right before free agency starts.
Let me say, one idea I saw floating around that I really liked, and I don't know, did Cliff Kingsbury get fired?
No.
He was just... Because I saw some talk about him.
He has 1 year left on his contract at Texas Tech, and a lot of people were talking about bringing him here.
See, I saw a lot of talk about it, but I don't... It doesn't make much sense if he didn't get fired.
Yeah. It was basically like, can you get Cliff Kingsbury to come here?
The more I thought about that, I loved that idea. I loved it. Because it's like, one of my problems with Andy is like, he has no semblance of a hurry-up offense, whether it be in quarter one or, you know, 4 minutes left in the game. He just doesn't have it. He just wants to play slow, I guess. Mm-hmm. So I thought bringing in Cliff Kingsbury was a good way to kind of offset that. And then, you know, given his history with Mahomes, like, makes a lot of sense. But, I mean, if he's not... If he didn't get fired, I don't see how it's even a discussion.
Do you think that there are going to be any changes on the defensive side of the ball as far as the coaching group is concerned? Like, even if they don't get rid of Sutton, like, are they going to just, they're going to keep, I mean.
Well, he's not going to fire his son.
And that's potentially.
I wouldn't fire Emmett Thomas because I think he does a good job.
Might be a problem, him not firing his son or bringing someone else in to try to help or what, because...
This is a legit complaint about Andy Reid, I mean...
But, I mean, it's a legit complaint everywhere. People, did you see all the Norv Turner stuff and how he's got, like, 5 relatives inside the Panthers organization?
No.
Yeah, it's like sons and nephews and cousins.
Charlie Weiss Jr. getting an offensive coordinator job.
I'm just talking about in terms of, like, the defensive line has... really underperformed.
Well, the bigger point on Andy Reid was when he was in Philadelphia, hiring that dude who coached the offensive line to be defensive coordinator all of a sudden.
Washburn, I think.
Like that's... No, I think it was Castillo. Juan Castillo.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
That was a laughably bad move. And...
yeah.
what?
Just think about
it. What?
It was the offensive line coach, and he was like, you know what? Why don't you coach the defense?
Yeah, that was... like, I guess it... It might make sense if he was bringing him, like, on offense under Andy Reid, because that's just kind of like a throwaway position, more so. But, like, Andy, you don't coach the defense. You need, like, a defensive guru here, not an offensive line coach. Let me reiterate, bringing back Bob Sutton would be the worst move of Andy Reid's career, or Chiefs' career, at least. And I am shocked that it hasn't happened yet. I have searched for it a lot, and I keep seeing that damn rap sheet. That's the first tweet when you search for Bob Sutton. Every time, it's that fake tweet.
Rap
sleep. On him retiring, and every time I get excited, nope. Fooled again.
Rap sleep. You got a darn
There's a
Schefter.
Bunch of them. There's a bunch of rap sheet ones. I think it's just, I don't know.
Okay.
Easy to mock. Easy to fake.
Okay.
Do I think there will be changes? I don't know. I guess not. Every day I'm shocked he's not fired.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that they're going to actually get rid of him, and I don't know what he's going to do to try to shuffle that staff around or what.
Yeah.
And I think that to me, it feels like maybe the team is a little resistant to, like, change that much in one offseason. If they're going to step away from Alex and they're going to be so focused on what they need to do with Mahomes that they don't want to change the defense too. But to me, it just feels like you're only halfway embracing the change that needs to happen.
Yeah, if anything, now's the time to change it.
Yeah,
next year is kind of the throwaway year.
Rip the Band-Aid off and figure it out, and then Chiefs 2019.
I might be looking forward to 2019 for some reason. I don't know why.
Hmm.
No. But yeah, this would be the year to make the change. I don't know. I got nothing more to say on it because it's... Just do it. Just fire him.
Just fire him.
Fire his ass.
Well.
Fire his red ass.
I don't think
Feed him some Hooters and fire him.
Bob Sutton's not a red ass.
No.
All right.
He's got a very bleached asshole is what you're thinking.
Oh, God. All right, folks. This has been Amateur Hour. I'm Ryan Scott Hall. He is his darkness back from the dead. And this is Chance the Rapper and future Smoke Break.
I like it.
Because I think that's probably what is going to happen in the lives of many Chiefs fans over the next couple months as we prepare...
While they listen to this podcast.
For the 2018 season. Oh, yeah. Who was that guy that said he was like, I want to smoke a couple spliffs and drink some Modelos and listen to Amateur Hour?
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah, you did, because you're like, he gets the show.
Ah. Well, there you go.
I guess that's what Dirk's been doing.
Yeah, I've tried to forget everything of the last couple weeks, so
I text your girlfriend and was like,
oh,
hey,
wow,
I haven't heard from Nick in like 5 days.
Oh.
Like nothing at all. Is he okay? And she's like, yeah, I think he just needs she's like, I think he just needs some time. Like, is he eating? Like,
is he eating?
Is he alive?
I had multiple people ask me that. Is that my thing?
Like, nursing him back to health. Just like,
can I just say,
watching episodes of Friends on Netflix. It's like trying to put some positivity in his life.
So you had people like sending these well wishes to me, like, get better, Dirk, get all this stuff, which is great. I appreciated every one of them.
Are you talking about the tweets?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I mean, I asked people to. I was like,
and I didn't see him.
My friend.
I didn't see him for a while, but then I saw them all, and then I go back to my Twitter account and look, and like the tweets that are like hanging up there is like, I would kill this ref and go to jail. I don't care. I want to throw bottles at these refs. Like, these are the tweets that are just sitting
at the top. I wish I was joking.
Yeah. And like people wishing me well, where I'm just like. Fuck these refs. Oh, I felt like I want to fuck up their families or something. It was some...
I mean, at one point you said, like, if we lose this game, I will quit Twitter. I will seriously, like, not tweet again for 9 months.
I meant it at the time. And I kind of meant it, like, the week after. So I thought about following through.
Yeah. I'm just not going to tweet again. I've been there.
Yeah.
Well, another
It was a rough couple days.
Another season in the books.
Rough couple days. Yeah, nothing I'm not used to.
Yeah, but bright days ahead.
I guess. I'm still not ready to embrace it.
You're not?
No.
Oh, I'm fully.
I see people get behind Mahomes and I'm just like, I mean, I'm gonna be excited, obviously. But I'm not there yet, no. I'm just like, quit posturing for retweets. Nobody's buying it. You fucking Mahomes excitement. I'm telling you, I'll be there, but it's off-season Dirk time. I'm not emotionally tied to the team.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Hey, I really enjoyed that.
Congratulations, honey. You were great.